Yomi, today we're going to be learning together Mizmor Kuf Lamed Zayin, the 137th Psalm in the Book of Tehillim, and that is the Psalm of the Rivers of Babylon. It is a very depressing, it is a very heavy Mizmor. It's perhaps one of the heaviest Mizmorim in the whole Book of Tehillim. Let's take a look at it quickly. It is comprised of 9 psukim and divided into 3 equal sections of 3 psukim each. The first section is about weeping, about being in exile. The second section is about the oath to remember Yerushalayim and not listen to the taunts of the enemies. And in the last section, it's a curse to the enemies in the future. In trying to understand the theme of this Mizmor, this is the Mizmor of exile. This is the song sung in exile. It is depicted upon the banks of the rivers of Babylon. Probably we talk about the Euphrates River. And it talks about our enemies. It expresses a strong effort to maintain dignity and the memory of Yerushalayim in a very humbling and a very disgraceful environment. It is defiance not to forget and not to even damper our highest moments of joy and never integrate ourselves into the new society as long as Jerusalem, as Yerushalayim, remains desolate. Saying that each of the 3 sections all mention the word Tzion or Yerushalayim. They're all focused on Yerushalayim, and no matter which stage of it. It is interesting that in the first section, moving towards the second section, we hear the voice of our taunters who are taunting us and saying we should sing the songs of Zion, and we refuse to because we cannot, and we make an oath that we won't give joy or express joy at a time of so much destruction. The last image of the Mizmor is a very shocking one. It talks about repaying Edom for the terrible actions they did, and it describes the crushing of the skulls of children against the rocks, which is a terrifying image, and it's almost as if the Misharer, the narrator himself, is so shocked by this image that he stops abruptly. The Mizmor ends with that image, and he can't even bring himself to continue. We do hear such cruelty at the hands of the Babylonians, and in Eicha, in fact, at the beginning of the 4th Perek, we do hear a reference to that at the letter Beis, the 2nd Pasuk, B'nei Tzion ha'yakorim ha'mesula'im b'poz Eicha nechshavu li'nivlei cheres ma'aseh yedei yotzer, a precious children of Tzion, once as valued as gold, they are now accounted as earthen pots, work of the potter's hands, the indication being of them being destroyed. In fact, the Gemara in Gittin, in these sugyas, and Daf Nun Ches Amud Aleph describes the terrifying description. Rabbi Asi would talk about how he would say there were 4 measures of brains of children whose skulls were smashed against the rock were found on one. So Ullah said 9 kav, and it goes on to describe that they are relating to this episode, which is described in our Mizmor. Another rather disturbing image, which is to be found in this Mizmor as well, is that although it's the image at the beginning sounds like they are hanging up their lyres, their musical instruments, so that they should not have to perform for the heathens who have taken them captive, the Midrash actually does tell us that it was more than that, that they actually bit off their thumbs. They bit off their thumbs because their opposable thumb was what they would use to strum the lyre. And in defiance to being entertainers and giving pleasure and music without context or spirituality, they bit off their thumbs, these Levim, so they should never have that opportunity to be able to express Simcha. It's interesting considering the voices in this Mizmor, there's an oscillation of who's talking about whom. The first 2 psukim are their captives talking about themselves as they sit on the rivers of Babylon. But then they describe in Pasuk Gimel the demands of the captives, that they who say, Mishiru lanu mishir Tzion, sing us the songs of your old country. To the captors, Eichan Hashir es Shir Hashem alad Masanechar. How can we possibly sing the songs of Zion on territory which is not ours? And they make an oath in the next 2 psukim. It sounds like this oath is made independent of the enemies, to turning directly to Yerushalayim. Mishkocheich Yerushalayim, if I forget thee, you Jerusalem, tishkachim, tibak lishoni liliz chikim lois kareichi, if I don't remember you, O Jerusalem. Then there's in Pasuk Zion a turn and a petition to Hashem, Zechor Hashem livnei Adam es yom Yerushalayim. Hashem, please remember what happened in Yerushalayim. And then a word towards the captors, and Amrum Oru Oru Adi Yosobo, that they wanted to destroy Jerusalem. And then and finally, ultimately addressing the captors, the Babylonians, and the Edomites. In relation to this, it is worthwhile thinking about who the actual enemies are in this Mizmor. The Mizmor explicitly mentions the countries of Babylon, Bavel, and Edom. and the country of Edom. Who are they referring to? So the Ibn Ezra points out that Edom refers to the country at the times of the destruction of the first base of Mikdash. They were a country to the east of Israel, and they were generally an enemy of Israel. At some point they were an ally, and they were very happy when Israel got destroyed finally and got a sound thumping by Bavel. In which context we are therefore say, let them also have it because of their rejoicing over our downfall. However, Chazal say that this refers to Edom as the idea, not necessarily as Edom as a nation, but the ideological Edom, which refers to Rome. And therefore, as the Gemara in Gittin, Nun Zayin Amubayis tells us, that in this Mizmor encapsulated are both the Golos Bayis Rishon and the Golos Bayis Sheni. The two Golios are included. The one is about at the hands of Edom, and the one is at the hands of the one is at the hands of Babylon, and the one's at the hands of Edom. First the Babylonians, and then later on the Romans. It is worthwhile noting that the Al-Sheikh does point out that this is and could be a song of hope as well, and that what that means is that when the nation of Israel first taken into exile into Babylon, and this is the first time they've ever been exiled since their sovereignty in having the nation state of Israel, they felt that they were completely rejected, as we see from many of the voices we hear in Yechezkel, who is a prophet in Babel, until Yechezkel got the nevuos on the Nahar Kfar, on the river of Kfar, to receive the prophecies that ultimately there would be a resolution, there would be a coming out of it, there would be a way to prosper. And this Mizmor is, in a certain sense, Al-Naraz Babel Shul Pras, Nahar Kfar, he says, Shom Yashavnu Ki Shom Hayolanu Shuva Vanachas Bameshehera Huam Shom Hu Yisborach LeYecheskel. That through the visions of Yecheskel, there was some sort of level that we were able to know that we weren't completely rejected. So there's a certain level of comfort to be found in this Mizmor as well. In trying to understand the events behind this Mizmor, or more importantly, trying to understand the history of this Mizmor, the Ibn Ezra points out that, and many of the Forshim point out, that this was sung by the Levim, by the Levites who used to be in the temple, who would sing to Hashem over the Korbanos, and that's why they're being asked to sing their cultural songs in this foreign context, and they're refusing to. In terms of the actual times of this authorship, there's a very, very large debate which is to be found in many of the introductions to Sefer Tehillim. So, for instance, the Ibn Ezra, in his introduction to Tehillim, points out that there are two groups of people. Some who say that that the Mizmorim can be prophecies about the future, and some who say that no, they were written, anything which refers to a later event is actually written by a later person and added on. The reason why this Mizmor itself is one of the difficult ones to understand is because the 10 authors of Tehillim, which are recorded in the Gemara in Baba Basra, does not include anyone who lived past temple, which means that it's very difficult to understand who was writing this specifically, and this is why this becomes the matter of a debate. To sort of generally see the spectrum of the different opinions, Rav Sadia Gaon believes that all of Tehillim are nevuah, so all prophecies, they are not prayers. Rav Sadia Gaon is actually answering another question, which is what the Karaites ask, which he's responding to: why is it that Chazal, Anshei Knesset HaGdola, created the Siddur when in fact we already had all the prayers of Tehillim? Answers Rav Sadia Gaon, they're not prayers, they are prophecies. If they're prophecies, it's very possible for a person in the past to look forward and see this terrible happening, the fact that we're going to be in exile in Babylon. Rav Moshe Ibn Jikatila, who is one of the earlier Mephoreshim, suggests that no, none of them are prophecies, they are all prayers, and they are all said by people in their specific current situation. If it says Le David, as many, many, many of the Mizmorim are, then it was said by David. If it has another introduction, it was said by somebody else and not David. The Ibn Ezra is sort of the middle kind of approach, where he says, yes, it's true that they are prayers, but nonetheless, not all of them there is a possibility of prophetic aspiration or anticipation in them, and it is possible that ones that don't have the David could also be said by David as well. He says that regarding Al-Naharas Bavel, as the Ibn Ezra suggests in his introduction, that it could have been written by later people, later prophets, because prophecy only closed a little later than the beginning of the second Beis Hamikdash, and was added to the book of Tehillim. It is interesting to notice that the Malbim, when in his introduction, in the footnote to his introduction, addresses this, because of course there are many people at the time who believed firmly that all of Tehillim was written by David, and it's very hard to understand this. And the biblical critics at the time, certainly in the 19th century, were already now attacking that and showing that academically it could not have been David who said all of them. The Malbim says, yes, it's true, it's possible that this could have been in fact written by somebody who was as late as Anshei Knesset HaGdola, as some of the Midrashim suggest it was the ultimate redactor of the Tehillim. Tehillim still the time of Nevuah, or it's possible that David himself wrote it b'Nevuah and hid it away until the time that it was relevant, as a suggestion of the Malbim. In considering the places in our Tefillah that it appears, the Maseches Sofrim in Perek Yud Ches does say it should be said on Tisha B'Av, which is the minag of the Svaridim to say it on Tisha B'Av. It is also said primarily before benching during the week, before Birkas HaMazon, not on days of happiness, not on days of Hallel, like Shabbos and Yom Tov and Rosh Chodesh, where we say Shir HaMalos instead. But nonetheless, this is said because we're about to mention and thank Hashem for Yerushalayim, Bonei Yerushalayim, and therefore, as we're about to mention that, we temper that by remembering that we're not fully there. For a similar reason, it is also said, the Pasuk, Hey and Vav, the oath about not forgetting Yerushalayim is said under the chuppah at the moment of our highest joy, which is referred to in the Pasuk, Al Rosh Simchasi. And although people sing it and kumbaya, and it's all very exciting, that's not exactly what the point of that oath was. The point is not to be at the height of joy and enjoyment when saying this. It's to remember that we're not fully complete at that point in time. It is also the opening mizmor of Tikkun Chatzos, when people wake up at midnight to daven to Hashem on the destruction of Yerushalayim. The Arizal would include this as the first of the mizmorim. One fascinating pasuk in the spotlight, and that is the penultimate pasuk, where we hear the description of what the Edomites would say, Aru, Aru, Ad HaYosod Bo, I apologize, this is Pasuk Zion, the third from last Pasuk, they would say, they would talk about how they're trying to destroy the foundation. For anybody who's ever had a chance of going to the Western Wall tours, you'll notice that not too far in, you come to across what's called the Master Course Stone. It's a huge stone, which is to be found there. In fact, it's 44 feet long, 11.5 feet high, and 15 feet wide. It is estimated to be almost 600 tons. It is an incredibly large stone. It was from the it was around 20 feet above the Herodian street level. And if you look at it, it's interesting that the top of it is, although everything in it is flat, the top of it is actually not flat. And the suggestion which is made is that that it was actually drilled down and chiseled down. This is where the Romans were trying to do exactly that, which was to Aru Aru Ada Yosod Boy, and they gave up. It was just too big. They couldn't destroy this stone. They left it. When you look at that stone, we see exactly this Pasuk over here, and remember the revenge that we ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu to pour upon those nations who tried so verily to destroy us. In the meantime, have a wonderful and meaningful day.